Support for Faith Matters comes from the law offices of Mullen, Hoard, and Brown, LLP, offering a full range of legal services to regional and national clients. Mullen, Hoard, and Brown are members of ALFA International. More information is available at 765-7491 or mullenhoard.com.
Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center, home of the Joint Ranch. Covenant provides a place where hip and knee patients come together for pre-surgery educational classes and then reconvene post-surgery for group therapy and rehabilitation. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
I'm Tom McGovern, host of Faith Matters, and it's my delight this Sunday afternoon to have as our special guest, Kate Hennessy, the author of a very wonderful book called Dorothy Day, The World Would Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother. Kate, before we came on air, we were talking about your wonderful grandmother, Dorothy Day, who has been a great inspiration for me throughout my 55 years in the United States. Kate, tell us a little about yourself.
My husband and I, we do quite a bit of traveling. He's from Australia. I'm from Vermont. We've lived in Ireland. We lived in Vermont. We decided to try living in the Bay Area in California on this intentional community called Canticle Farm. It's in the Fruitvale section of Oakland. It's quite a troubled neighborhood. There's a lot of problems, a lot of violence, a lot of gun violence. Canticle Farm is a community of about 28 people who are trying to kind of bring beauty back into the neighborhood by turning the yards into this wonderful garden. It's a real oasis. They're very Catholic worker inspired. The founder is an ex-Catholic worker, and they're kind of melding the Catholic worker ethos with Franciscan spirituality.
Which is a nice segue into your grandmother, Dorothy Day, and the Catholic worker. Some of our listeners would not be familiar with your grandmother, so tell us just a little about Dorothy Day.
It's a fabulous story. She really was an incredible woman. In shorthand in her life, she was a journalist. She was a writer. Writing was her vocation. She wrote 5 books, many articles, a column in her own paper that she started in 1933. She started a movement called the Catholic Worker Movement, and it's based on houses of hospitality and also kind of a back-to-the-land portion of that self-sustainable farming, though that never actually really took off. But the houses of hospitality really are a tremendous movement still in the States today. My grandmother died in 1980. The Catholic Worker has about 250 houses of hospitality, places where they do whatever they see the need for in their cities or in their towns, whether it's with immigrations, whether it's with single moms with children, addiction, you know, whatever the need is that they see in their neighborhoods.
So the works of mercy in action.
Absolutely. The works of mercy is the mission statement of my grandmother and of each Catholic worker house.
In terms of your grandmother's, first of all, wonderful story, she grew up from a family of writers. In your recent talk, you described how her father tried to dissuade the editors from hiring her.
Yes. Well, this was in 1916, 1917. My grandmother was very young. She was 18. She was determined to become a journalist. That was what her father was. That was what her 2 older brothers were. And eventually her 3rd brother became a journalist. To her, that was a natural thing to do. And she loved to write. She was determined, and her father was also very determined, 2 very bullheaded people. He did try to prevent her from getting a job, but she persisted, and she found her very first job with the New York Call, a small socialist paper in New York City.
And then one of the epiphany moments, transforming moments of many in her life, when she was arrested in Washington.
Yes, it was for women's suffrage. It was November of 1917. She had just turned 20. A friend of hers had just been arrested and came up and said, "We need more women to get arrested." And my grandmother said, "Okay, fine. Why not? Sounds like a good thing to do." My great-grandmother often said about my grandmother that Dorothy bit off more than she could chew. And I think this was one of those cases. What happened was they were arrested. President Wilson decided to make an example of the women, because at that point, the women would be arrested, then they would be released, and then they would go back to the street and get rearrested. At this point, they decided to send the women to an infamous work camp in Virginia, in which they were beaten, they were treated terribly. You have to keep in mind that these were well-to-do women. These were women from the middle and upper classes. The women went on hunger strike. It became a huge national scandal what was happening at the work camp, and so President Wilson eventually pardoned all the women. But that experience was an eye-opener for my grandmother. It was horrific. It was very, very difficult for her. She really was treated very poorly by the guards. You know, these things are hard to look at later on. She was a convert to Catholicism. We all love conversion stories, I think. That turning point, you're one way, one time, and then suddenly you just change dramatically. And with my grandmother, it was a series of these events, and this certainly was the first one. It gave her firsthand knowledge of the suffering of women in prison.
And inspired her then to found the newspaper, The Catholic Worker, eventually?
Well, there's a series of other things that happened. This was in 1917. The Catholic Worker movement didn't start until 1933, which was the height of the Great Depression. There was a series of events. She was very much part of the literary crowd of Greenwich Village at that time. She knew everyone, including Eugene O'Neill, who was a very good friend of hers. She had a dreadful experience with that crowd. A man that she had just met that night overdosed on heroin in a restaurant and died in her arms while everyone else fled. And there she was left with him. And she's still 20 years old. Remember, she was very young. And this so affected her that she kind of fled the literary scene of Greenwich Village and went into nursing. She became a nurse in training. Her timing was impeccable. It was at the height of the Spanish flu. She talked about healthy young men and women. You know, the Spanish flu affected people in their 20s more than any other group. They would come into the hospital in the morning, ostensibly well, and by night they would be dead. It was a profound influence on her. She went back to journalism at that point. She fell in love with a newspaper man, became pregnant, had an abortion, and this also was a very difficult experience for her. It was physically extremely dangerous, and she believed that she would be incapable of having children, and that was a huge blow to her. She always was able to earn a living as a writer, which many people at that time could not. She had a wonderful disregard for money. I mean, it was amazing. A paycheck would linger on an editor's desk for weeks because she would fail to come pick it up. She really just never worried about money.
Kate, we'll take a short break and we will continue this wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center. More information on customized plans for joint replacement surgery is at covenanthealth.org/ortho.
Support for Faith Matters comes from Hospice of Lubbock, serving the 19-county South Plains region since 1986. The staff offers faith-based end-of-life care for both children and adult patients. More information is available at hospiceoflubbock.org.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. It's our special joy this Sunday afternoon to have as our guest, Kate Hennessy. Kate is talking about her most recent book, Dorothy Day, The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother. Subsequent to this, leading up to the foundation of the Catholic Worker, both as a paper and as a movement, what happened in the years in between that and the early 30s?
She wrote a novel that was kind of semi-autobiographical. Hollywood bought the rights to make a film out of it, and they actually never made the film, but the money allowed her to buy a cottage on the beach on Staten Island. My grandmother loved the beach. She loved water. I think it was a great source of spiritual comfort for her throughout her life. She would always return to the water whenever things got too difficult and she needed more support. She bought this cottage and then met a man, Foster Batram. They both fell in love and she got pregnant, had a child, Tamar, my mother. And this experience was so important to her, so crucial to her. You know, remember, she didn't believe she could have children. And this was such a miracle. She was not going to squander this moment, that it had such deep meaning for her, that it was such a sacred moment for her, that she really wanted to do something to show her gratitude. She was in radical circles, definitely not religious. Her parents weren't religious. She did not grow up in a religious house. But throughout the years, she had these kind of moments of just becoming more and more aware of the presence of God, and then more and more aware of Catholicism as something, as a religion that she was attracted to.
The reaffirmation of the beauty of the world that she found in the birth of your mother.
Absolutely.
How did that lead into the Catholic worker? Or is there a connection?
Oh, definitely. There is a connection. It wasn't immediate. It took a while. It took about 5 years. She was continuing her life as a writer, as a journalist, until she met a man, Peter Morin, who is a French peasant. Now, at this time, she had become Catholic. She had had my mother baptized as a Catholic. She had become Catholic. The relationship between her and Foster fell apart because of great differences between religion and marriage. My grandfather did not believe in marriage. So she was kind of wondering how to combine these two worlds, her newfound faith and her radical world, in which she was very much concerned about rights of workers, the rights of the poor. And she didn't know how to combine these two things until she met Peter Morin. And Peter Morin said, here are the church's teachings on social justice. She had not heard of this before. She did not join Catholicism because of its teachings on social justice. She did not know of that. So this was a real revelation to her, and it just sparked her imagination so much. She said, we have to write about this. She started her paper, the Catholic Worker paper. She didn't intend it to be a Houses of Hospitality or a movement, just a paper, a penny a copy, and it still is.
Kate, in moving towards writing the book about your grandmother, in the preface of the book, you capture some of the inspiration, and I think our listeners would really benefit from hearing you read from the preface.
In the last years of her life, my grandmother often woke up hearing in her mind the words from her beloved Dostoevsky, the world will be saved by beauty. Of all the words she wrote, of all the quotes she loved to repeat, of all the advice and comfort she gave to countless people, in all 5 of her books and 50 years of her column, and in a lifetime of diary and letter writing, this is what has come to give me the most hope. For if, after years of struggle, weariness, and a sense of deep and abiding failure, she believed in salvation through beauty, then how can we not listen? I discovered this aspect of my grandmother while reading her diaries. They were published 2 weeks after my mother's death, but it took almost a year before I could bring myself to open the book. Then, once opened, I couldn't put it down. It was as if I, dying of thirst, were given a long, cold drink from the purest of wells. As I read, I felt a growing need to add another layer to this tale, not only to portray the grandmother I knew and her daughter, her only child, Tamar, but also to somehow bring my grandmother and mother together in ways they hadn't been able to achieve while they lived. On the morning after I finished reading, I lingered in that half-asleep state where both dreams and reality take on a different quality altogether, that in-between state where you sometimes hear a voice you're certain is from someone in the room calling your name, and you wake up saying, yes, what is it? But no one is there. My dream was brief, as dreams of this kind are, no beginning or end, just a flash containing all I needed to know. And in that moment, I felt sure and true the knowledge of both Tamar's and Dorothy's lives, with all their experiences and memories. And I was overcome by this knowing. I felt the weight and the miracle of their lives. And I wondered if I was strong enough, wise enough, to tell this story. But haven't I been working on it all my life, living in their wake and stumbling along, trying to make my own way? And isn't this my history also? One of the elements of what makes a person extraordinary, I have come to believe, is when their inner and outer lives are in accord, when what they do in the world is what their innermost being leads them to do. This is why the history of the Catholic worker is the history of my mother, the history of the relationship between my mother and grandmother, and the history of my family.
How beautiful, Kate. Such a marvelous pulling together of the inwardness and the outwardness of us. That is so touching. Tell us a little about your mom.
Oh, my mom was just as amazing in her own right, but it was hard to tell because my grandmother was such a powerful personality. I like to tell people that this book, even though it's about someone who's very well known and someone who's in the process of being viewed for sainthood, this really is a story about a mother and a daughter, that at its core, that's what it is. It's a story about family. It's a story about how two women have expanded the notion of family.
What inspired your grandmother with Peter Maurin, of course? How did the houses then begin to come into existence?
Well, it all started unintentionally. Grandmother thought she was starting a newspaper. What quickly happened is this was the Great Depression. This was 1933. It was the height of the Depression. People started showing up at her doorstep saying, "We are homeless. We are hungry. It's well and good to write about it, but can you do something about it?" My grandmother didn't blink an eye. She just immediately started a soup line, started opening up houses of hospitality. Within 3 years, they were feeding about 1,000 men on the soup line every day. They were housing about 70 people in a house in Little Italy, lower Manhattan. Houses sprung up around the U.S.
At the present time, how many houses are there?
It's always a guess because they come and go so quickly, but there are about 250 houses, mostly in the U.S. and some in Europe.
I loved when you said in your talk that the miracle of your grandmother and of your mother is that the houses came into exist and continue to exist in such a precarious fashion.
Exactly. The Catholic worker is always on the verge of falling apart. It was that way from the very beginning. And 85 years later, it's still that way. But it still exists. It is indeed a miracle.
And on that high note of miracle, we'll take a short break and come back and continue this wonderful conversation.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center. More information on customized plans for joint replacement surgery is at covenanthealth.org/ortho. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors.
Support for Faith Matters comes from Hospice of Lubbock, serving the 19-county South Plains region since 1986. The staff offers faith-based end-of-life care for both children and adult patients. More information is available at hospiceoflubbock.org.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters, and it's my delight for Chuck and I, Chuck Luck, our producer, and myself, to have as our special guest this Sunday afternoon, Kate Hennessy. And Kate, we've been talking about your mother and your grandmother, and Chuck was curious about the materials that you drew upon and to put the book together. You mentioned that you're a family of diary keepers. Tell us about how that was helpful to you.
Well, I was very lucky. Not only do I come from a family of diary keepers, but I come from a family of storytellers and letter writers. There was a lot of information, not only my grandmother's diaries and her letters, but my mother's, my father's, letters from my grandfather to his mother. There are many archives also that I was able to access who had a lot of this material. And photos, probably about 2,000 or 3,000 photos.
There's a marvelous story that you identified in your recent talk when Mother Teresa was visiting one of the houses and one of the residents accosted her for a cigarette. Share that, if you will, with our listeners.
I was 15 when I first visited the Catholic Worker in New York City with a group of friends from school. A man began throwing rocks at us a block away from the house, and we fled. It was 1975, and the city, worn, filthy, and bleak, was near bankruptcy. The following summer, I showed up at Mary House, the house that my grandmother had opened for women, 6 months after it opened, and this time I was met at the bus station by Stanley. Everyone needs a guide when entering the wilderness, and it was Stanley who helped me through those first encounters with the Catholic Worker city houses, with his Brooklyn accent, receding hairline, broad smile, and round stomach that he would pat gently and say, "Too much Catholic Worker soup." I continued to show up for short visits during school breaks, and Lena Rizzo greeted me, as she greeted everyone who walked into Mary House. In the summer, she lived in Union Square, on the sidewalks between the trash bins and walk signs, surrounded by her belongings, which were kept in canvas U.S. postal bags she carried in a supermarket cart. In winter, she lived on the bench in the Mary House foyer. She refused to stay in a room, where she spent her days sewing clothes with large running stitches. Garrulous and friendly, she had her own style of language. "Is Doris on the microphone?" she'd call out, which I learned to interpret as, "Is Helen on the telephone?" She asked everyone who passed, Got a cigarette? She even asked Mother Teresa of Calcutta when she came to visit. No, I'm sorry I don't, Mother Teresa replied, to which Lena said the same thing she said to everyone who didn't have a cigarette. Well then, what good are you?
So Mother Teresa's reputation rose and fell on a cigarette. How beautiful. I'm sure she appreciated that.
She laughed.
Carrying the story forward, your mother had a difficult early childhood with her mother, with your grandmother.
It was very difficult for both of them to be separated so much. I really need to say to people, to impress upon people, that my mother absolutely loved the Catholic worker. She grew up in the worker. These were her aunties and uncles. She always felt she lived in exile when she left the worker. She left the worker when she got married. But in those early years, my mother was lonely and missed her mother. But she understood exactly what was happening. She was a very wise child. My mother said to me, my mother was a single mother.
I love what you just said, because it's a challenge to all of us when there are single moms and children, mothers trying to rear children on their own, that we, the larger family, can step in and provide the nurture that makes it possible for children to grow up with a sense of family and a sense of community.
Exactly.
And that's what you're trying to provide in your own life in Oakland at the moment, would you agree?
Yes. Unfortunately, though, I'm not meant for urban life.
That is the dream, and that is the challenge, and that is the wonder of, that is the miracle of the Catholic worker.
Exactly. It is family. It is forming a new idea of family, a greater idea of family.
And in a world which is so individualistic, what would your sainted mother and grandmother say to us in terms of family, in terms of extended community?
Well, it all comes back to love. My mother would say, all the world needs is loving kindness. My grandmother said, love is the measure by which we shall be judged. This is the transformative element of life, is the love that we feel and receive and give.
Let's look to the recognition, shall we say, of your grandmother in the current movement to have her canonized.
Well, it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? To be able to speak of one's granny, you know, she's granny to me. That's my primary relationship with her, is granddaughter and grandmother. But yet, it's always been since I was a young kid, young child. She was a public person and she was a private person. Those two always melded together. They were not completely separate. So I understood that. And of course, as a child, you just accept things as they are. As I grew older, that I understood more of who she was as a public person and how much respect people had for her. And people spoke of her as being a saint during her lifetime. Now, of course, there's a very famous quote of hers, don't call me a saint, I don't want to be dismissed so easily. And people view that as, well, then we best not make her a saint. But I think that's a profound misunderstanding, one, of what she meant. I mean, she absolutely loved the saints. She relied upon them greatly. So she was not dismissing saints. What she was doing was dismissing our notion of setting her aside as being perfect, and therefore we don't need to do anything, and we can just continue on with our lives. And she was saying, no, you have to do the work too. Don't look to me to do the work. You need to do the work also.
And that comes across so beautifully in the book, Kate, that the wonder of how our lives are transformed through suffering, through challenge, helps us to love more.
Yes, and this is not an easy story to read. It's full of a great deal of suffering.
Going forward from here, as we recall Dorothy Day, what would you say to our listeners this Sunday afternoon in terms of where you see part of the challenge of what it is to be human in our society?
My grandmother would say now is fear not, that's the biggest request from Jesus. He told us, fear not. And I think we have gotten very bound up in fear. We fear each other. We fear anyone who's not like ourselves. We fear the rest of the world. And I think we have to just set that fear down and walk forward. And I think my mother would say, pay attention. Pay attention to each other. Be good to one another. Be kind to one another. Pay attention.
A final word from Kate.
What I would say comes from the title of the book, The World Will Be Saved by Beauty. I think the two of them really taught me so much about the transformative nature of beauty. And if we don't allow ourselves to see it and recognize it and be changed by it, we'll end up destroying our world.
Kate, it's been an absolute delight having you as our guest this Sunday afternoon. I wish you well with the book. It's available at Barnes & Noble's. One more time, give us the title of the book.
Dorothy Day, The World Will Be Saved by Beauty.
And with that wonderful invitation, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center, home of a full range of orthopedic services, including Joint Ranch. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.